you hire for one of the top, if not the top, Australian tech company, Atlassian. Why do some people end up getting high paying roles and really go on to have thriving careers in great tech companies? And why do other people struggle?
One of the big ones is communication skills, the way they actually communicate, the way they impress, convey their stories. Huge, huge differentiator between talent. Then their ability to go deep on the topic or subject matter. And I think the third one is just their conscious navigation of their career. They don't just move around. They actually make conscious decisions where to go and chasing the impact.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Career Confidence Podcast today. It honestly means the world to me. Now, before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know about something I have been working on behind the scenes. So as you know from listening, I am writing a book called The Bold Move. And alongside the book, I am also developing something that is really going to help people in this current world of work. Now, what I'm hearing from so many people is there is a lot of uncertainty, there's fear, there's lack of confidence, lack of clarity. People are generally concerned about their careers and what the world is going to look like over the next 5 to 10 years. And no wonder, because stats like 44% of workers are going to have to change careers by 2028, according to the World Economic Forum. 300 million jobs could be impacted by AI globally. And then the fact that, according to LinkedIn, 60% of professionals don't know what their next step should be. It's no surprise that there is a lot of confusion in the market right now. And I really want to do everything in my power to help. So alongside an amazing team, I've created a AI-powered career mentor called Pivotr, spelled P-I-V-O-T-R, pivotr.com. And what this tool is going to give you is everything you need to succeed in this new world of work. Whether you're looking to pivot into a completely different industry, learn AI, and make sure you're staying ahead in your career, pivot up in your current industry, go for that promotion, or even a pivot project, you want to launch your own thing, Pivotr is going to be your career mentor in this new uncertain world of work. It's going to give you that clarity. It will give you that personalized roadmap and break it down into weekly sprints so you know exactly what to do to get you to where you want to be. It's also going to have voice enablement so you can chat to Pivotr anytime you need that little bit of comfort, clarity, certainty. The AI tool and Pivotr is going to be there to support you and guide you every single step of the way. Now, we are only looking for a handful of people to test the product as it's in very, very early stages. So if you'd like to be involved, please go to pivotr.com. We'll make sure that we put it in the show notes and reach out to me if you'd like to know more about the tool I'm creating. But I really, really am looking forward to launching this. And as the listeners of the Career Confidence Podcast, you'll be the first to know when the tool is ready for you. So go to pivotr.com, check it out, pop your name on that early access list. You do not want to miss out on the opportunity to be one of the first to use this. Your feedback is going to be very, very valued and will shape the future of this product. So thank you so much again for tuning in today. And now, over to today's episode. Eli, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I am really delighted to have you on. I know this is going to be such a great conversation. You and I share quite similar backgrounds. We've worked in technology recruitment for a little while now. I'm sure you've got some very interesting market insights to share with us all. So before we dive into everything we're going to talk about today, get us up to speed with who you are, your career journey, and what brought you here today. So Eli, over to you.
Thanks, Georgie. It's great to be here and thank you for the invite as well. So where to start? I've basically been in recruitment all my life, all my professional life. I fell into it like many of us. I'm lucky, I'm happy that I fell into it, to be honest, in retrospect. Been in technology recruitment for the 10 plus years. Started everything in Germany, and then moved to Holland, and then met someone in Holland, actually in Amsterdam, who happened to be Australian. That's why I moved to Australia now almost 7 years ago, I think. And after that, coming to Australia, continued my recruiting journey at an agency and then moved into in-house positions. Worked at a very, very awesome consultancy company called Mentor Group for a couple of years. And then after that, moved to like a fast fintech company, Airwallex. And then needed something else. And then I joined Atlassian. And why I'm in Atlassian at the moment as a principal recruiter for the past 3 years now. And during COVID, just after COVID, or in the middle of COVID in 2021, I wanted to actually also do something on the side where I could kind of channel all this knowledge that I have, this niche knowledge, and just give it to people who are struggling with finding a job. And that's when I started, you know, doing CareerZ on the side. I'm still doing it at the moment. And yeah, that's basically my life at the moment. Work, 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 and a bit of fun on the sides.
Sounds like my life. Yes. as if the day job wasn't enough, we've got to create these extra things. But no, like you, I think it's the drive to help people. Okay. I think that's what really drives us. And I think if I look back on, I had no idea what recruitment was, probably like you, I just sort of kind of fell into it as well. Why I got into it was generally to help people get jobs. I thought, what a fulfilling career. The yeah, idea right. of, you know, getting people and helping people and giving them job offers, that really excited me. And then I got into agency and realized, oh, yeah. okay, this is not quite what I thought it was going to be. That's the whole conversation itself. But the drive to help people is definitely something you and I have in common. And that's really what I wanted to sort of get you on today, to pick your brain, because you've helped place over 300 tech professionals in high paying roles. And probably more by now. That's what I read on your LinkedIn. So that was probably, you know, going back a little while ago now. What, in your opinion, over those placements are the key standouts? Why do some people end up getting high paying roles and really go on to have thriving careers in great tech companies? And why do other people struggle? What's your thoughts there?
That's a good question. It's hard, of course, to boil it down a few things, but there are themes that we can definitely identify. And for me personally, these themes are one of the big ones is communication skills, the way they actually communicate, the way they impress, convey their stories. Huge, huge differentiator between talent. Then their ability to go actually deep on the topic or subject matter. For example, I do a lot of software at the moment. Them having foundational skills and being able to kind of build on top of that, and then that showcases in the interview process, et cetera. So that's the second one. And I think the third one is just their conscious navigation of their career. They don't just move around. They actually make conscious decisions where to go and chasing the impact, you know. It's not only the dollar, but actually the impact. So for example, good candidates will say, okay, what will I be working on over the next 6, 12, 18 months on this, when I join this company, right? And this is really important for them, because if they don't have enough impact in the role, then what's the point, you know, for them? So those three things are really standing out to me.
I would absolutely agree with you there. And it's interesting. I think communication is becoming more and more important, especially in tech, as AI comes into play and it can do a lot of the grunt work. I'm hearing this a lot from hiring managers and talent. They said to me, Georgie, on the hard skills, we want someone who is around a 6 or 7, okay? Because we can train up the rest.
Nice,
on the softer, aka critical skills, we want someone who's an 8 to 9.
Yeah, there you go.
Are you seeing that as well? Like, you hire for one of the top, if not the top, Australian tech company, Atlassian. You've got really high standards to get in there. You know, you've really got to be the best of the best. Would you agree with that? It's like, is Atlassian open to seeing people who have got more of that, those emotional intelligence skills versus the tech skills? I know they are important, but what do you say the blend and the balance is of both now?
I guess, like, you know, the way you framed it is exactly how we see it as well. And from our point of view, you know, those communication skills or these soft skills, it's very hard to teach them at some point. It's very evident in a candidate if they have the necessary foundational skills. For example, they are really good in GCP, Google Cloud, but they don't have anything on AWS. We are happy to train them on that. It's, you know, one cloud to another. But if they are struggling extremely in the interview process or on the comms side, this is a huge problem then. So it's kind of a hurdle for the candidate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think as well, it's how people are writing their resumes now, how they're standing out online. Can we talk to, because I think this is something that I see a lot on LinkedIn. You and I, before we hit record, we were talking about the personal branding piece and how important it is now for engineers, any sort of career professional, to have some kind of online presence. I think you and I are both on the same page there. It really sets you apart. And I don't know about you, but when I get a resume in, the first thing I'll do is I'll look up the LinkedIn profile and I go, who is this person? Who are they about? Why is that important right now to have a bit of a brand, some sort of, like, I guess, online presence in the marketplace?
I think with the increase in talent, the competition is just a lot more fierce, right? You have so much more competition. And one way a lot of the talent hasn't realized yet is to stand out is basically to create content and to basically promote yourself a little bit more in regards to what you're doing, how you're doing things, what you have learned. And you can do this very easily on LinkedIn. And the majority of the people that I work with do not do this. And it's like a missed opportunity, right? And I think the sooner that you realize this, the better it is, because like you, I go on their LinkedIn profile as well. For me, it's usually, if the resume is not so good, I go on LinkedIn because it's like a lot more structured and I get a better impression on their profile. I do that because I want to get a feel for them, like you said, but also, is it similar to what I'm seeing on the resume, or are there two different stories here? And when I'm on the profile, I don't know if you do this as well, Georgie, but I look at their post activity as well, to get a second, like, impression on them, you know, without speaking to them. What do they talk about? What do they post about? And what do they maybe comment about, you know? And I saw today on my feed, it was suggested a hiring manager had like over 1,000 likes that post. It was saying the three important things that he's looking at is their resume, of course, and then LinkedIn activity. And then there was something else. I was like, there you go. You see, even hiring manager, I knew it. It's a fact. They look at their hiring activity, at their LinkedIn activity, to get, are they actually talking bad about stuff? You know, if that's the case, I don't want them in my team. And that's the reality, you know? So the way you show up at work, but also online, is hugely important. And it's going to get even more important as AI comes into the picture a lot more, and the competition is getting better and better as well.
Mm. I am with you there. So let's just talk to that and just give a few people some pointers. And I'd love to also get your own personal journey as well, Eli, of how you went about this, because I think we can learn so much from our own story. So when did you first start posting on LinkedIn, and how has that helped shape your own career? What benefit have you experienced from building out your brand?
I was, like many of us, very conscious about posting. I didn't feel good about it. And the turning point came for me because I was trying to build something for myself, career coaching on the side. But I had a lot to say about the topic that I was, I guess, coaching about as well. So I would post one or two times per week. And this is what I say to my clients as well. Aim low, 1-2 times a week. So you can stack these little successes on top of each other. But this would happen, Georgie. I was like, now I didn't post again for a week or 2 weeks. I get demotivated. I was like, damn it. And I get angry with myself because I was going to do that, you know, like, and then I kind of fall off the bandwagon. And this would go on for an entire year. I would post, I would be regular, consistent, and then I would fall off again. Then I was like, okay, this is not working. I set this little goal for myself. For the next 30 days, I'm going to post every day. And I got inspiration from other content creators in my realm, you know, in terms of coaching and what they're doing. I was following a lot of accounts that are very good at this. And boom, after that, after 30 days, I was consistent. And now I'm doing it every day. And now it's like second nature. And that gave me like the proof, it never happened before, that if you stick to it something for many, many days without fail, it becomes a habit. I was like, wow, it is true. So, yeah.
It is so true. And actually, I love this approach because, I think in the beginning, you can say to people, just share something a couple of times a week, but you're right. What it needs to become is a habit. So I love the fact that you did that 30-day, I'm not missing a day. This is what I'm doing. I'm reading a book at the moment called Your 90-Day Brand Plan. And nice. Again, it sort of breaks down the importance of doing something consistently every single day. And then it's almost becomes an ingrained habit. But just going back to those sort of 30 days, how did you get the inspiration? How did you know what to post? Because I'm sure you hear this as well. But Georgie, what do I post about? What are you interested in? I like to think about it in terms of like different buckets of like, you know, if you're in technology, you could talk about your tech, you talk about emerging trends. There's lots of different things you can do.
So much.
How did you sort of break it down?
Yeah, I was like that also. Like, what am I going to post about tomorrow? Mm-hmm. Anxiety, you know? And the cool thing about this is once you start actually doing the thing, you are immersed in a new world that you haven't seen before. Different people posting. Now your awareness of keywords, topics, and I guess the topics that are of interest to you gets higher as well. And you are seeing a lot of things, which is kind of like you're collecting those information. And what helped me was being immersed in this world and learning from it and being hungry for, hey, well, how can I improve? And I would then find tools that I've never heard of. I would find, supporting mechanisms like, hey, you can actually schedule your post, you know, you don't have to do it on the day or the day before, which was a game changer for me. And I started, I took a course from Justin. You probably know him, Justin Welsh. I did actually his course on LinkedIn, how to go about your LinkedIn posting. He's quite famous in America, and I like his approach. And that kind of helped me in two ways. One, it was kind of motivating to see how he has done it. And two, he's shared like tools and resources that kind of helped me build on top of. Yeah, and then some 30 days pass. I'm like, wow, I posted so much great content. And then the cool part was the feedback from the audience, from the market. Hey, Eli, I really like what you're posting. It's really helping me. Hey, can I talk to you? I have this issue. All these things were happening to me, right? And that's kind of like a great feedback mechanism where I'm like, oh, this is cool. This is motivating me. Of course, there were some times, you know, where people didn't agree with what I was saying, or dislike what I was saying, but I realized this as well. This is actually that's the deal that you're making if you start posting, and it's part of the game, and you should be okay with that because you cannot please everyone and just focus on the people that like what you are talking about, that kind of subscribe to that. And then that's all that matters really at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you're speaking to something really, really important. And I heard this and it's really helped me that if people, look, you're never going to please everyone, correct? If somebody is commenting or someone's being negative, I almost drown them out if they're not in the arena. If you're not in the arena, if you're not posting, if you're not doing all these things, then why would I care what you have to say? Like, I know that sounds really brutal, but you sometimes have to have that approach when you're first getting started. And then the other thing, I'm sure you've heard of him, watch his content, is Gary Vaynerchuk, who talks about document, not create. And how just in our lives, we're having conversations to candidates all the time. And we might hear things, see things, you know, someone sends through a resume that's written by ChatGPT and we go, oh no, not the same resume I've seen 50 times now. And it's a good thing to just sort of speak out and post about it and share about it. The other thing, talking about ChatGPT, someone else recommended this the other day, is even just utilize AI at the moment. Type in, I'm a software engineer, I work in this industry. What would be some really good talking points that super I could easy. Share?
Yeah, right? There you go.
There's five ideas right there. What's the most, what are people searching for in my industry right now? Boom. Utilize it. Have it as your co-pilot as well. Like, it's never been more easier to show up online than now. And just get that sort of inspiration and those sort of juices flowing of what to post about and how to build up your brand. So I love everything you've just said then, because I think it's just so important. It's why I want to touch upon it with you today. So you've mentioned the business that you've gained from posting, but final thing, what other, I guess, positive signs have you seen from building up your own brand? Obviously I reached out to you because I saw that you'd been, you're an article on LinkedIn of like top voices to listen to.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, like that's how I discovered you. So obviously people want to invite you on your podcast, which is only good for your brand, but what other, I guess, positives have come from you sharing your knowledge and wisdom online?
It's awesome that you asked that, you know, because I'm now in a WhatsApp group with other people, like-minded people that are, you know, following what their passion, and that's giving me a lot of motivation, inspiration as well. So that happened because of that, and I've been able to connect other people with other, you know, like almost like a network. I'm connecting people with other people that are hiring, that are need people, I guess, talent, and. You know, because I'm helping others to do that actively with my coaching business, I can see when they're posting content that the market is reacting to this. And almost like, I told you so. And clients are able to book interviews through that, build new, you know, informal catch-ups, and really promote their own personal brand, which is awesome to see as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Amazing. Let's talk to your coaching practice now. I'm sure you, I'm always really curious. I think this is what makes maybe a good recruiter, but I'm really curious to understand patterns and themes. When you are coaching individuals, when they're coming to you, wanting help with their career, getting a job, whatever they come to you for, what are some themes and patterns that you see? Are there sort of some common things that you hear, heard that before? Because yeah. What is the sort of market telling you right now? What are people struggling with the most when they're sort of looking for work?
Yeah, I like that too, in patterns. You know, I think it's in our gene as a recruiter. A very common pattern is that they are sending applications and not hearing back.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I guess, very, very common. Or I'm in the interview process, but I don't pass the next round. That's the communication bit as well. Or I have an offer. Awesome. But then they pulled back last minute, which is like new. It's happening a lot more recently that clients are getting offered, but they never come through, which is like terrible. Or I'm lost. I have no idea what to do or where to go next and how to do it. So just the general, I guess, how to go about the job search effectively it's a huge mystery. Yeah. Those four things come to mind.
Okay. So let's just say there's someone listening to this right now. They've been on the market for a while. They are sending resumes, they're applying for jobs, maybe they're getting a couple of interviews, but they're not hearing back. What advice would you have for that person? What are some of the things that they should be looking into and being curious about why they're not securing the next position?
If they are, for example, don't have any interviews, the first and the best place to start is your written documents, so your resume and your LinkedIn. There's a lot of resources out there to, you know, dig deeper around why it might not be working. Typically what happens is that the knowledge that they have on how to write the resume is actually just wrong, because no one really taught them that. They focus on, hey, this is what I do every day, rather than, hey, this are the results and the impact of my actions every day. No one wants to really know what your day-to-day actually looks like. They would much rather hear how you have kind of impacted the business and, of course, what kind of technology environment you're working in. So that. And then the LinkedIn profile is just not enough information out there in there for actually recruiters to find you, because as you know, recruiters are spending majority of their time in LinkedIn Recruiter to find talent. And if your LinkedIn is bare minimum, just title and company, you're essentially missing this great opportunity to be found by recruiters who are looking for talent. If you're getting past that stage of, you know, you're applying, you're getting interviews and not passing that stage, it's my best recommendation would be actually to find some or use the question that you have been asked, record yourself, and then just listen to it. You will see that you might be missing the point in the question, or your answers are just way too long and they're just not hitting the note, so to speak. And okay. A few things, but I think I'll stop there for a sec.
No, that's perfect. And I'm really, really pleased you've just touched on this, because I did a whole episode on this myself the other day about the mistakes that job seekers make. And one of them is not optimizing their LinkedIn profile for searchability. And what I was trying to explain is now, because LinkedIn recruiters got so good, we can literally upload a job brief and LinkedIn will be like, hey, here's the top 20 people that match that job brief. And these are the people that are open to work. And if you're a job seeker and you don't know that, you're not going to know how to update your profile. You're not going to know what you need to be put in. So that is so important for people to understand.
Yeah.
This is how the industry is changing. You're not just sending in a resume now. You have to make sure your LinkedIn profile is up to date with all your key skills. Anything that to add to just to that point that you think would be really beneficial for job seekers to know, that even to the point, like, should they put their technology skills in the title? Like, what are ways that they can really make sure that their LinkedIn profile comes to the top of the recruiter's search?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a mindset shift. Don't look at LinkedIn as a branding card for the company that you work for. It's not about the company, actually. It's about you and what you have done. It's your own profile. So instead of having in the headline, hey, I work at so-and-so and this company, you can say, this is my title and these are the skills that I have. And this is my value proposition that I can bring to your organization. And this is what I'm really like trying to, I guess, bring home. This is my message is, you are selling yourself, your abilities, your skills, your expertise. And once you realize that, everything changes. The narratives changes, the way you come to the table changes. And, you know, it takes effort. And I think a lot of people don't want to put the effort in.
That's gold. I just want to just hold space for that. That is gold. That mindset shift, we could mic drop now, and that's, I think, people are going to go, oh, that's interesting. That's absolutely fantastic, because you're so right. In a way, when LinkedIn first came about, it was all about the company you worked for promoting them. And individuals have got to understand you are in the driving seat of your own career. Your LinkedIn profile is your personal brand. So yes, it's the company you work for at the moment. That's got to be on there. But what do you do? What do you contribute? That's so, so powerful. So you're not the company. It's your individual self that you're promoting. Absolutely love that. Just talk to us a little bit more about then, just quickly, the resume. What I'm seeing right now is a lot of people are just sort of going, I have robust skills in Java, you know, React, and there's no substance. How important on the resume piece is it to really make sure you're listing all of the achievements and make them really tangible, as opposed to just a list of what you did, the benefits, as opposed to the actual outcomes that you delivered on?
Of course, that's critical, right? What you're talking about here. I'm just thinking, you know, how can we kind of drive this point home? And imagine you're like a workshop apprentice and you have your tools with you in your hand. You're like, I'm great with all these tools. And you're like, you're knocking on the door and you're trying to get a job at a workshop. And the workshop is really well known in your city, you know. Everyone wants to work there. And you're like, look, I got the best tools. They're all new. And I'm really good with this tool. And the guy is saying, awesome. But where's the proof, man? Can you show me some proof? Instead of being that person where you're just listing all the tools and language that you are really good at, robust at, you could also come to the workshop, say, this is the brand new car I just fixed. Look, these are pictures from before, and this is what it looks like today. It was all me. It's the same in your resume. You come to the table and say, I'm using these robust languages and tools to do this, or this is what I've done with those languages. So don't just name these keywords. Put them into context and tell me how, what you did with those tools and languages. I think that would help.
I love that analogy. That's really, really powerful. The final thing I want to just go on to the CV, and I want your opinion on this. Do you think people should customize their resumes for each individual job? Or, because this is a debate I saw on LinkedIn the other day, is it okay for people just to have a custom CV and send it to everyone? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, good. I read these, I guess, contradicting opinions as well. Yeah. And like you said, you need to first of all listen. Who says that? Who says what they are saying? And is it a good source for you to take the advice from? But to answer your question, my approach here would be: you need to first of all have a resume for a job family. For example, if you're really good at software engineering, but you could also be a product manager, you cannot use one resume for both of these positions. So that's number one. The second thing is you should have a master resume for software engineering and product management. So you essentially have a lot of bullet points because you checked a lot of job descriptions to ensure, hey, am I actually representing, selling myself to the best of my abilities? Because what happens a lot of times, Georgie, is the client or candidate looks at their profile and says, looks at the job description that they want to apply for, say, oh, I can do all of them or majority of them. But then we look at their resume, it's actually nowhere listed. They haven't listed the words that we're looking for. They haven't listed the examples that they're actually asking for. So when we look at tailoring, you should tailor the resume to a degree where it needs to be relevant for the role. So for example, if the role is asking for lots of Kubernetes experience, but in your resume, even though it's a software profile, you don't say much about Kubernetes, then this is a problem. It's a big problem because you came to the workshop again with the wrong tools. You know, you look like a mechanic, but not the type I need right now. So that's a problem. So that's why you need to customize it a little bit. And I think this is where my opinion leans more towards that, where every time you apply for a job, just cross-check. Have I actually answered what they're looking for? If not, then just put a bullet point in there if you have the experience to back it up. Otherwise, missed opportunity, in my opinion.
You and I are on the same page. And I think I could apply this to so many things, but even if I look back to all of the work that I do when I'm trying to bring on a new client, I won't just send the generic message to 100 companies. I will think about, what does this company need? What is it trying to achieve? And I will make sure when I'm doing my initial reach out that I have picked out something that is a particular challenge, or if I'm reaching out to a particular hiring manager and they've got something on their LinkedIn that they've just done, I'll say, oh, I love the fact that it's these little things, and it takes effort. But it's worth it, because if you are determined to, whether it's work with a particular client like I am or get that job in that company, that could be the difference between you getting the interview or not. Am I right in saying that? Because you work internal, you've got all the data, you've got all the knowledge of what actually goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah,
if you're 100%. Getting two candidates, one of them that's done a more customized CV and maybe cover letter, and one that's just sort of sent a generic CV, who are you going to be more inclined to want to interview? I'm guessing, providing there's a good CV and they've got the skills and a nice LinkedIn profile, you're going to favor the one that's gone that little bit extra to really take that time.
100%. 100%, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Georgie, I have a question for you, if you don't mind.
Oh,
you
yes,
touched
go.
On the topic of cover letters.
Mm-hmm.
It's also one, right? With so many different opinions. Mm-hmm. In tech, yeah? Mm-hmm. Should people that are applying for jobs write cover letters?
Oh, Do you know, I was having this debate with someone the other day. Look, I just think that, okay, so when I think about when people apply, I think if you're going to customize a cover letter, if you're really going to take the time to really think about what you can personally bring, why you want the role, go above and beyond to research the company, absolutely, it can't hurt. It can't hurt. But I think that people are really busy. We run all the ATS systems that we have now, right? I don't know if they're as important as what they used to be. However, I think it just depends on the role you're applying for. If it's a senior role, whether, or if it's like, you know, if you know that you're going to be out of a pool of graduates, for example, and you really want to stand out. I think it's case by case. I think there's no harm in doing it, but I think it's not necessarily something that I would say you must do now. That's personally my opinion. I think that because you know what it is? I've seen too many generic ones. If I saw an amazing cover letter of someone to say, this is why I'm fantastic for, say, Seat Solutions. This is what I can bring. This is what I love. I've just been on your website and I love that you do this and this and this. I go, wow, this person's really gone above and beyond here, right? The first impression really counts. But I think I've just seen too many now copy paste jobs. And I'm like, if you're not going to take the time to really put the effort in, don't bother. Yeah, that's my thoughts. What are yours?
If you are a senior software engineer and you're applying for jobs, in my opinion, don't bother writing a cover letter because it won't be I can't speak for everyone, but the chance of that being read is very, very small. If you are, for example, relocating from another country or you're coming back from maternity leave, there's a bit of context. Highly recommend that you put a cover letter in there and make a reference in your resume. Hey, I actually wrote a quick cover letter touching on my history here. I think a lot of candidates actually never make a reference to this in their resume. So definitely make a reference to prompt the recruiter who might have missed it to actually go find it. And of course, for senior roles, like leadership roles, might be useful as well, because maybe the talent pool there is much smaller.
Yeah, I think that's the really key piece there is make sure you reference it. If you've got something you've put in your cover letter that you really want the hiring manager or the recruiter to read, that's got to be referenced, or we probably won't read it, will we? Let's be honest. Because, okay, so this is really good stuff. And I think people listening to this now are probably really getting insight into how we think, what we do. So that's really good. But look, I want to sort of, I guess, really dive into now. Okay, what are some, you've mentioned some mindset shifts when it comes to LinkedIn, thinking about you, thinking about the individual. We've talked about CVs, cover letters. If you're not getting the offer, you need to do the mirror work. You need to record yourself. You need to really understand what your shortcomings are. When it comes to now this new world of AI, new world of work, we can't really just sort of not discuss that. So I want to just go into that now. What is your opinion on how AI is going to shape the future of recruitment and the tech industry? I'd love just to get your opinion on that now.
Oh, I think we are still trying to come to grips with how it's going to impact us and what it means for the future. So, you know, what I might say right now is not applicable tomorrow because it's changing so quickly. But while all of this is happening, I think the most important thing for candidates is actually to, hey, this is out there. How can I make it use it for my advantage? How can I use it for to make things better for myself? You know, I use AI myself quite a bit as well. And when you use it, you actually learn about it and you can see it's actually almost like your phone, you know, like it's your extended brain. You can bounce ideas off. You can talk to it like it's actually someone else, you know, a person, and improve everything you are doing essentially. If you are not using AI in your job search and your resume and everything else, you are falling behind really quickly, very quickly. So that's number one. You need to, if you haven't done so, start using it. And second thing is you need to learn how to use it properly. It's like Googling. You need to learn how to Google properly as well. And there's a lot of resources out there on how to do prompt engineering, etc. So definitely start doing that. But AI is also making its way to ATS systems, interviews, etc. So I read the other day, an AI bot is going to interview you, your first screen. You know, this is happening. Startups, they probably invest into that rather than having a huge TA team, for example. It's something that is coming. So again, educate yourself around this topic and find out what it could mean to you and how you would kind of overcome that hurdle if it came to your desk as well. Yeah.
I think what I'm hearing a lot is like disrupt or be disrupted. And this is why we need to, and like you, I use AI every single day in my life now. And, you know, even when I'm sort of thinking about how to really, like, if I get a job brief in, I'll pop it into ChatGPT. I'll be like, can you just pick out the key skills and how could I write this in an email and how could I really sell this? And just doing, help me do research on companies as well and pulling out the data from that. It's fantastic. And it's speeding up so much of the grunt work that I used to do. But I've got to ask, and this is just really your opinion now, how do you think our industry is going to be massively disrupted? Do you think recruitment is going to, because like you just said then, the bots are coming to interview people. How do you think our jobs are going to evolve as recruiters? Just curious to get your thoughts there.
Again, maybe I'm hopeful, but I'm hoping that we will be just more efficient in what we're doing and we'll be focusing a lot more on the human aspect of the role rather than, you know, sourcing every day. You know, a bot might be helpful with that. And we spend on the more high quality things like offers, interview preps, interview feedback. You know, I wouldn't want to lose the human touch with these kind of things where we have a human connection, and that should not go away because there's an AI thing in the mix, you know? Like you said, it makes my job more efficient because I can use the JD, find out keywords. All of these things are great. But if it crosses a line where there's no human touch anymore, I think that is the wrong direction. And I don't feel it would go that way personally. I think it will be more like a symbiosis, you know, we work together to make things more efficient and effective for everyone.
That is definitely my hope as well. So you and I obviously are very optimistic about the future. I really do think that it will hopefully free up some space for us to, yeah, do the part that's really the human skills, the negotiation, the conversations, the, you know, the feedback, all of that, that I would love to invest more time into. But, you know, a lot of our job is very sort of, I guess, manual focus in terms of the search piece. If we could outsource that to AI a bit more, that would be fantastic. I just want to come on to now, because I'm fascinated, I'm sure like other people would be listening to this podcast. You've worked for some really amazing companies like Airwallex, Atlassian. In your sort of opinion and thoughts, because getting talent is one thing, keeping it is another. And it's really interesting now in this world that we're seeing where people are going back to work. Some companies are saying 5 days back in office. And I'm like, please, no, please, please, no. We do not live in the industrial revolution anymore. We live in the tech revolution. We do not need to be going into the office 5 days a week. Can we please not go back there? What does a good culture, in your opinion, look like? How does companies like Atlassian attract and retain the best talent? Is there anything that you feel like these companies do particularly well?
Culture, always a difficult question and has so many correct answers as well, right? Because what seems good to me might be very bad for you. So I can speak from my personal experience around what I feel it's a good culture and why I feel that resonates maybe also with engineers. A culture where, first of all, you can voice your opinion without repercussions. That's a really important thing. I don't want to be afraid to say something, or if I say something that might touch something, a sensitive topic, that I might lose my job tomorrow because of that. The second thing is there's a balance between work and private life, that there's trust that, for example, if I'm going to duck out for 1 hour right now, that I won't skip my commitments to work. There should be trust. And that goes back to this work from home and work from the office. I am like you, like, why the hell are we going back? What's the point? We've proven that it's possible. And a, and a values-driven organization that actually uphold their values at all costs. Because what happens is, I feel, the faster you grow, the increase of employees, the values are almost taking second seat, you know, they're not really prevalent anymore. And it has to be driven from someone, like either the top or at the bottom. We need to kind of uphold those values, and the way we are acting and behaving should be in accordance with that. And that should be communicated frequently. I think that's really, really key. And if that doesn't happen, things go sideways really quickly. And maybe the last point that I want to make is, if concerns or maybe negative comments are raised in a forum or anonymously, frequently, it should not go unheard or unnoticed. It needs to be acknowledged, and action needs to be taken transparently. And I think this is a really good sign of a good culture.
I really, really like that. And because I feel like so many people are afraid to speak up because they're afraid of saying the wrong thing or how it might come across. Everyone's afraid of offending everyone at the moment. But the biggest thing I hear of, like, when people say the argument for coming back to office, and I understand it. And I think, look, hybrid is definitely sort of I sit sort of with a hybrid because I do love being around people. But the biggest thing that people say to me is, well, it's more collaborative if we all come together. And I see the point, and I do understand that. And I think that's why I do think hybrid's a great sort of middle ground. So I'm just curious, how does Atlassian, are you still fully remote? Is that still how you work? So how does Atlassian as a business then overcome this piece? Like, how do you still create that sense of collaboration and culture being a remote first business?
I'm grateful that we are remote and we're going to stay remote, which is awesome. Essentially, the whole organization has changed itself. The way we go about our day, it's basically remote now. You know, like, we can't have in-person meetings and exclude everyone else. So that doesn't happen. Everything's on Zoom. So that's number one. We also feel that connecting people physically, it's a really important aspect of how we get shit done, essentially. We have intentional togetherness where we are actually meeting every 3 months, for example, at least. We're bonding, we are working on big ticket items, and essentially we're getting our fix of the human connection. And Atlassian, for example, says, hey, even though you can do your work anywhere in Australia or New Zealand where we are, but you also have the option to go to the office. No problem. If you live near Sydney, you can go. For example, I'm going to go in on Thursday. No one is asking me to do it, but I actually want to. There's a lot of cool things happening. I live in Newcastle. I make the way and then go there. And that's how we feel kind of connected. And we have a lot of kind of ceremonies around building the team connectedness as well.
Yeah, I just think that's really, really fantastic and such a smart move by Atlassian, because there's so many great,
so smart,
like, tech people out there that are looking for fully remote, and the you know, the options are becoming fewer and far between. So it's really good to see that the company and how they're going about it. But I think the key thing with it, and I would say that you have a very, very key pivotal part of this, is who you recruit in the first place. And I think that organization, you know, because if you get motivated people and you're bringing them all together with other A players and other high performers, it creates automatically this sort of level of collaboration, because everyone wants to pull each other up. Because if you're working with other top professionals, you go, well, I want to be like Eli. You know, he comes into the office once a week to collaborate and do these all the cool things. And oh my God, he's got a side hustle about career coaching. And automatically everyone levels up. Everyone doesn't want to drag their feet, quiet, quit, and all the rest of the things that we've heard throw around, right? Because you're hiring A players, good people. And I think that's what companies need to focus on. Not, can we trust our people? Give the trust, hire great people, and get out of the frigging way and let them do their jobs.
Nice. Well said.
My thought process. I could come and just sell Atlassian. No, but seriously, it's just refreshing. We need to keep the companies there and be advocates for remote working. And because I don't want to see this get lost, Eli. It's something I'm quite passionate about, especially when it comes to women, you know, who are the caretakers, and all that sort of thing as well.
Oh, mate, I heard something. I was speaking to a friend. She came over from Sydney for lunch. And she was saying that the company, I won't name the company name, said, you have to come back to the office 5 days a week. And they are a female. And they say, I cannot. I have two children. And my life has completely shifted. I cannot make that commitment to go back to the five days. She was fired. She had to quit. And that is heartbreaking to me. Mm-hmm. High-performing individual cannot make that rigid transition back to the old ways, has to find a new job. Terrible.
And I wish that was an isolated instance, but it's not. No, and that's why I wanted to have this conversation just on the podcast as well. I think it's really important to hear this, that if you're with an organization right now that doesn't align with your values, and there are other businesses out there like Atlassian that hire really great people and are going to keep those remote first working. And it's obviously working incredibly well for you because you hire a lot of amazing, smart people. So yeah, just want to pull that all together there. But look, final thing before I let you go back to your day job and recruiting, and thank you so much. It's been such an enjoyable conversation. Is there anything that we haven't touched upon today, Eli, that you wanted to share with the audience, with anyone that's sort of thinking about a career change, getting themselves on the market, anything that you think is worth them noting that we haven't discussed today?
Yeah, and I've been thinking about this quite a bit recently as well. And it really boils down to there are a lot of resources out there around job search, how to go about it. Almost don't wing it. So do your homework on this topic. It's like a skill that you can develop. Find people like myself, you know, speak to Georgie, get the knowledge that you need in order for you to navigate this maze a little bit better and know the yellow flags, red flags, so you can make better decisions and actually fail fewer times to get to your destination faster. So there's lots of little knowledge that you need to in order for you to perform better in resume writing, LinkedIn, interviewing, etc. So I think, you know, I see a lot of people coming to me after the fact, and only few people come to me before they actually make that decision to look for a job. So I think that's a missed opportunity altogether, because you are burning bridges by doing it yourself. That's a really important one, I think.
Fantastic. Where can I send people to find out more about yourself, your coaching, and all the amazing things that you're doing? Where do you hang out the most?
Probably on LinkedIn all the time.
Yeah.
So definitely my LinkedIn profile. I will have all the information you need. But if you need more support, you can also go on my website, careercoaching.com.
Amazing. We'll make sure we link everything below. So go and check out Eli. And thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with a fellow tech recruiter. And I'm sure we could have done a whole episode on all the war stories that we've been through. Oh, yeah. And maybe we'll save that for our out of hours one. But thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
No, thank you as well for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.